And blessed to be a part of your day, Kevin Miller in the morning on KIDO Talk Radio. Well, 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 if it isn't Dave Pezzo, Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. Nice of you to show up here.
I'm so sorry. This
no, I'm talking
ran
about last
late.
Week. Where were you last week?
Oh, last week?
Yeah.
Visiting Grandbaby.
Oh, so?
And then I went to Chicago at a meeting.
Hey.
Hey.
We got priorities here, buddy.
I know you do.
No time off for you.
That's right.
You're going to have to dock your compensation
That's
on that.
That's right. All right.
So let's start off with the biggest stock collapse in world history has no end in sight from Bloomberg. Apparently, it's we're talking about PetroChina. And they've hit bottom. 10 years ago, PetroChina peaked on its first day of trading in Shanghai. The state-owned energy producer has lost $800 billion of market value.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Saying,
wow.
That is a lot, though, Kevin. Really, remember how hot some of those Chinese companies were here sure. a decade or so ago when they first were coming out. It reminded me way back. This goes way, way, way back. To when Japan was on fire in my early part of my career, and they had stocks there that were selling for ludicrous
Empire, remember
amounts.
Remember, they bought the Empire State Building.
And they bought, that's right, and Pebble Beach also.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a pretty crazy time. But anyway, they also, of course, have come back to earth as well. So I'm thinking this is another, but $800 billion, that's bigger than Apple is.
It is indeed. So, Dave Pezzo, before we go through some of our usual topics here at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, anything that you would like to bring up? Usually I just kind of bait you with this segment that we have, but I wondered if you in the spirit of, you know, falling back, which will happen this Saturday, do you have anything that you would like to share with us instead of the usual Miller trap that I try
That's
to get you
right. I just know I'm going to step in it, so
right.
I'm going to be very cautious here.
I see, yes.
But
yes.
I will say a couple things this week that happened that were just phenomenal, really, and again, show that we are really in a different time. And for those people who have, if you will, said that this market was all due to the Federal Reserve and things like that, you need to reassess. I know it's, quotes, too late to get the 350% that we've had since the bottom, but the point here is this. We hit record highs again this week. We are now looking at 10, potentially 10 months in a row here, 10 months in a row. This year alone, we have to make it clear through Tuesday to have another positive month. Obviously, this has been a tremendous rally with Donald Trump, but at the same time, we're seeing real earnings. This last week, they came out with amazing earnings in the tech companies. To give you an idea, the NASDAQ, which is tech heavy, if we had had an equivalent gain in the Dow, it would have been over 500 points. That's how strong earnings were. And this is real deal stuff. On top of that, we've got GDP coming in at 3% with two hurricanes, Kevin. Two hurricanes in that number. That was very unexpected. We're seeing the market surge and earnings surge and the GDP surging. It isn't too late. It never is.
Well, Cindy thought it was too late for her. However, at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, we've got people talking about this whole tax reform thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, now that we've passed the budget or what have you, they want to move on to taxes. What would be the significance? And I know you've talked about this, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but of two things that have been rumored to be part of it. Number one, getting rid of the mortgage deduction.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, let's start with that one.
Yep.
The builders are against it. The real estate folks are against it. I'm against it. Why? Why not?
We're going to do a segment sometime, Kevin. It's going to be what Kevin Miller is for.
Yes, exactly.
Puppy dogs.
Right. Rescue mission.
Sunshine. Rescue.
Yes.
I like it. I do like your priorities, though.
Right. Okay. And it's funny because, and again, as my dad would say, and he still does to this day, Kevin, if you had a brain, you'd be dangerous. And look, that's a term of endearment, okay? So, but I go back to the year 1996,
mm-hmm.
and Dick Lugar came out with the flat tax. And Steve Forbes kind of did it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But part of, I think, Dick Lugar's plan, not Steve Forbes' plan when they were running for president, was to get rid of the deduction for the mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
It was very controversial then.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on whether or not that should go?
Out. Gone.
I knew it.
Gone. Has to be gone.
Shame on you, Dave.
There are Pezzo. There are no sacred cows. And why would it be a surprise if you know, for the real estate group? Come on and stop it. You think we're never going to build a house again, or that's it? It's without
that's
the deduction, they're never
people.
Going
that's
to.
A good deal for people.
Most people don't get any part of that deal, by the way.
What do you mean they don't get part
because
of it?
Because most people do not itemize their deductions. And if you raise the on the lower end, you're going to have even fewer who are deducting. And so, therefore, it really is an offset, especially for lower income people.
So if no one's using it, it's much ado about nothing. Now, I could hear the phones burning off the hook right now. If we took phone calls on that.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin, it is, you're right. There is obviously some bucket of money there. I don't know what it is. But what you're talking about, they're talking about doing is raising the non-itemized deduction. Standard deduction, finally came into my head. The standard deduction up, meaning it would, for lower income and middle income people, would be completely irrelevant on any kind of a mortgage deduction.
So we have that issue, which you're in favor of.
Well, I am. I'm in favor of simplifying and quit deciding we're going to do social engineering and economic engineering with the tax code. Let business take care of itself. We don't need any special interest in there.
Well, gee, business does such a great job of regulating itself.
It does a better job than the government does.
Right. Well, that's where you and I disagree on that.
You think corporate welfare is not alive and well out there?
I think corporate DC? I think corporate well is alive and well in Idaho.
I do too.
Yeah, I think it comes down to
in all government.
Look, I'll say this: in theory, you're right, but you know how it is. The better the accountant, the better the better the lawyer. I mean, the criminal justice system. Hey, everybody gets a fair trial. No, if you pay for the big lawyer and he's buddies with the judge, you're good to go. If you're Tim and get
buddies
the guy fresh,
with the judge,
if you get the guy fresh out of law school,
that's true too.
You know?
No, I think I, especially when it comes to any kind of government entity, whether it is justice, police, and even if it's local government, I think in many ways the downtown Boise is becoming a bit of a swamp with the ACDC. All these things that they have, where they have a big bucket of money, tens of millions of dollars are being doled out to.
Hey, yeah, you're a Boise guy. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I've been saving this one for you.
Okay.
How about that stadium? Oh, it's not going to cost the public any. Come on, you live in Boise. You're still paying taxes for like the Telegraph.
I am.
You know,
as a matter of fact,
Boise
yes.
homeowners. I wish one day, and I'm not going to get political here, but should be liberated from the oppressive taxes that you pay on everything to live in Boise.
It is incredible in downtown. There's another, I said, there's tens of millions of dollars that are being doled out to developers to put up facade, like at the formerly Oahe Plaza. Millions of dollars were just given to them because they choose to go and do that. And it's not to beautify the building. This is not sidewalks and stuff. So it's a big deal, Kevin. It's a very big deal. A lot of money down there.
Coming up, we're going to talk about hotels and, well, just the expansion going on in the Treasure Valley with Dave Pezzo. You're listening to Kevin Miller on KIDO Talk Radio. KIDO Talk Radio. Dave Pezzo with us. Money Matters, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. So, you know, I was driving through a town called Caldwell. Are you familiar with Caldwell?
Caldwell. Hold on. Yeah, I think I saw it on a map once.
It's, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's out there with my people, the folks.
Yes. Yeah.
And I couldn't believe all the building going on in downtown Caldwell where they're just tearing up the roads. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about it. And look, I'm showing my bias where I live out in the, you know, Star Middleton, you know, semi-meridian area. And, you know, you see the building going on there, but in Nampa, in Caldwell, especially in Caldwell, it's got to be a challenge in the morning just because all the streets that are closed and such. We're seeing a ton of building. We're also seeing that in Boise as well. Mm-hmm. What do you think is funding that? And there was an article, hey, we've got hotels. Now people are coming here. I mean, you deal with these big financial projects. How did somebody get the money to do these things? Do you think it's government? You think it's speculation? You think it's private business?
No,
I know that's a tough one. But
there's some of all of that in most everything. For example, if you are talking about how do we get you and I talked about this for years.
Sure.
One of the big problems was getting airlines to come here because you can't attract business if you can't fly their people out and about. And so that obviously is government as well as, say, the, you know, different business organizations pushing on that. But you really do have government involvement there trying to promote different airlines. So you get all of that together. But what's going on in Caldwell is really a growth of this valley and people choosing to live out there and people seeing economic opportunity. And when you do see that and you say, well, what if I bought out these old houses here and put in a new something or other? And that's what we're seeing happen. And it happens everywhere where there's economic development. It's real. But Kevin, if you have projects that aren't good or people are concerned about, they don't get financing. And so that's why business is so good at determining what we should have and shouldn't have, because it has an economic basis rather than a political basis. It says, hey, these are my pals. They gave me money in the campaign. Let's go ahead and take some of the tax treasure of other people and put it over here. It may not be a good deal. And when you're putting up your own cash, then you are looking for economic development. And that's why those choices are most all the time much, much better than government would ever make.
All right. We continue on. Speaking of building. Mm-hmm. Let's go to downtown Boise. Now we're going to have a Hilton Garden Inn. Mm-hmm. That'll be right next to Simplot's place. 620 rooms. Blah, blah, blah. Let's see. When the Hilton Garden Inn opens, the downtown room supply will have climbed by 620 rooms, or 48%. That will top the 580 rooms needed to meet the demand identified in a study. So we have three new hotels. Now we're going to have a fourth. Apparently, the folks that have renovated the Boise Center believe that this can be a hotbed for conventions, which you and I talked about years ago.
Yeah, it can. It can certainly for that medium-sized one. Our convention center is not big enough for any large conferences. There's no doubt. It's just not even close to as big as, gosh, even like a casino in Las Vegas has a bigger conference facility in the back 40. You know,
or Reno.
Or, well, I don't know if Reno has that big of places.
You're
Reno-centric,
though. You like the Reno.
I do like Reno. I like the smaller town much better. But it's they have actually a huge conference center there. I've been in it. It's a very big conference center, much larger than Boise has. So they are attracting them, and we are going to try. But we have a lot better vibe in the downtown area than Reno does by far. So I think people would come here if the size of the conference could fit. So with all these new rooms, that's going to be very helpful, Kevin.
And we continue on here. So we've got the Hilton Garden Inn. We also have the Inn at 500 Capitol, Hyatt Place, Residence Inn, all in downtown Boise. Then you have Bi-Mart getting ready to open up in CUNA, rumored Albertsons in the Star Middleton area, along with the Ridley's. Massive building going on here. The challenge for local governments, and I'm sure it's come up in the Nampa mayoral election and the Caldwell mayoral election and the Star recall election, you know, how do these local municipalities keep up with it? Or, you know, is that a state issue, really?
It's both. It as local as you can be. You want it to be local because you have much better control than you do on a statewide basis. Not as many people have to come look at it and to make a decision or to push it down the road. So it's always going to move more quickly. And decisions, again, more local are better. Because it's not the same area, for example, as Coeur d'Alene. So you have a different opinion on what you ought to be doing. I think that the local governments so far, in my mind, have done a very good job. We think about all the building that happened in downtown Boise. In my opinion, they did a great job with, you know, again, traffic was slower, it was more difficult, but we got around the big Simplot construction project and Jump and all that. It worked out fine. I think government is doing a good job. We're going to have more traffic problems because, doggone it, everybody has discovered Boise and they're moving here.
Well, they're discovering the Treasure Valley.
Pardon me. Yes, the entire Treasure Valley.
Right, you know, from really mountain home to Ontario, most some people say.
Oh, absolutely. And let's not forget south of here, too. I mean, seriously, that's Snake River area out there and Homedale, and that's a nice
Homedale's
area.
Homedale's
blown up. Sunny Slope. Caldwell, as you point out, I was out there the other day picking apples.
Really?
Really, really.
Finally, I met a young man who has moved in next door to me.
Okay.
And I told you, I'm surrounded by people that have moved here from California. They've got me wedged in. I'm kind of that lone republic there in Star, the guy from east of the Great River. But regardless of that, he was telling me, and I've seen this a lot, Horseshoe Bend is doing a little revitalization as well, but Emmett is the place where people are buying. A lot of people going to Emmett right now. They just redid that Albertsons. As you can tell, the grocery stores are top of mind with me. And Emmett seems to be the next boom place that it'll be a couple years away from what Star and Middleton are just beginning to experience now.
I would not disagree with that. Emmett's a charming little valley over there, and I think people coming into the area would be fine with, you know, because they're used to a longer commute. We think that Emmett is way out there, because it might be a 15-minute commute.
That road scares me.
And it is a scary road.
My wife laughs at me, but that road scares me.
It is not a good road. And widening it, making it safer as over time, they will be doing that, I'm quite sure. And I think that will add to the boom out there. If you can get in and out of there pretty quickly and on a safe road, I think people will be more than happy to go out there to Cherry Country.
Yeah, Cherry Country. He's got a couple horses and stuff. I thought it was me. He's not going to be staying next door to me very long. I lose neighbors all the time for some reason.
That's so weird. I can't imagine why.
Dave Petso, will you be in Saturday?
I will not be in Saturday.
Oh, I put you on the spot here.
You did, actually, because here's what I said on Saturday. I was going to be in, and I have to just fall on my sword. I went, no, I'm not. I'm going to go see my grandbaby.
Are we
going to
see you Monday?
We are going to see me Monday.
Well, good. That's the important one.
That is important, but yes. All right.
All right. Are you sure you're going there? Are you really just scouting some type of Petso West Center in Seattle? Are you taking over the Space Needle or something?
No, but actually going to go see a Seahawk game.
Really?
Yeah.
Good luck with those people.
Yeah, right.
You're listening to Kevin Miller on KIDO Talk Radio.
Hello and good morning. Thanks again for listening, and I just wanted to let you know as well, in the second hour, something has been, if you will, just kind of been itching to get out, I guess. I just went in this week with Ray Amaya, and recorded an hour. And really, I guess I want to call it making the case for equities, making the case for stocks, making the case for owning the great corporations of the world. And that's going to play in the second hour, and I hope you enjoy it. I really felt great about it. Ray did too. And I think you're going to enjoy it. We'll see. I hope so. But we're going to play that in the second hour. So if you have any questions, comments, give us a call right now at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Also, of course, you can always email, that's Dave at petsofinancial.net. You know, it's amazing when we look at some of the earnings coming through during this period of time. And you know, I'm not this, here's what's happening, this second kind of guy in the market. But the earnings are strong. And when we stop and we recognize what market movement, stock market movement is about, what's it about? It's always about earnings. In the end, it's about earnings. Earnings, if you will, though, relative to other options. You know, what are the other options in the world? What could I be investing in today instead of the market, the stock market? If earnings are good but other options are better, people will still shift money. And I think this is one of the things that people miss and have missed so greatly in this incredible surge, is that corporations have continued to make money, even though everybody's worried about Obama, they're worried about Europe imploding for 4 years, by the way, because that just simply wouldn't go away. At least people wouldn't stop talking about it. And they're worried about everything from Ebola. Remember that? That was just a huge problem. And the list goes on, right? Oil prices rising. And then we have a really big problem because oil prices are collapsing. I mean, we worry, fuss, and get concerned about absolutely everything. And sometimes we lose focus. How was business doing during that period? How's business doing? Were they profitable? Yes. How were the balance sheets of corporate world? Record amounts of cash had built up. So they were very secure. The balance sheets are really solid. Profits are amazing. Dividends were being raised crazily. Stock buybacks were being raised because corporations felt that their stock price was way undervalued. Guess what? They were right. It was a good move. We think about that. And you think about how much we miss when we don't focus on the fundamentals. What are the fundamentals? Corporate profits is the most fundamental of anything. Yes, there's many more things, but nothing as important, not as big a driver as how are the companies doing. And they've been doing good. They've been doing very well, better than expected, year after year after year. And so when people ask or say, why in the world is the stock market so high? Well, let's see. Corporate profits, record levels. Corporate balance sheets, pristine. Never been better. Cash, stock buybacks, shortage of stock because of all those buybacks. One of the reasons. That's why, and no alternatives. It's not that hard. And when we talk in terms of what goes up must come down and so on and so forth, we really miss the point. We really do. We make excuses why we were wrong, so wrong. When we focus on one little moving thing or target to another, instead of just drawing back and focusing on fundamentals. And when we look at that, we also have to ask this question too, right? Can this last? I mean, come on. Why is it lasting? What's going on here? I mean, we've had a long, long expansion here. We're nearing the records, right, of how long it's ever lasted, these recoveries, right? And the answer is, yeah, we are going long. Is it long in the tooth mean that's it? It can't go any higher? Do we guess because of the time limit? And the answer, of course, is no. That's, again, how people have made that mistake. You draw arbitrary averages out there without understanding really what it is. Is it really an amount of time? Or perhaps is it an amount and a combination of amount of time with the amount? The amount, meaning how much has it gone up? How fast is the market rising? Is it rising at a reasonable pace? Or has it been shooting straight higher at a ridiculous, unsustainable pace? And really, when we look at the overall economy, slowest recovery ever. Recovery, yes, but way worse than it should ever have been. Way worse. And that's, of course, because of all the things and all the problems we've talked about. We don't need to spend every program talking about how bad the governing policies were in the Obama administration. But it is important to understand that that is the fundamental cause for why things were so slow. And that is being changed every single day. Not just with legislation, with deregulation. So many of the problems that business has is overregulation. When you overregulate, you have no chance of business expanding. They can't. They won't. They don't know what the rules are, and they're getting worse all the time. But when you loosen those reins and you're free to run, I believe that's what we're seeing now, are these animal spirits. Right? The market, the economy, business running like crazy. We have two straight quarters of 3% plus growth. Haven't had that in years. And that, when we stop and think about, in spite of the hurricanes that are supposed to have taken as much as 1% GDP off, that's astounding. That's really astounding. And that is without any legislation. That's because of the belief that things are getting better, in my opinion. But as we talk about it being sustainable, this expansion has been so slow. So slow. As we talk about, now that's an important point. If we are going to talk about it being sustainable, then we have to also understand about the pace of this increase. It's not super fast. It's been slower than it should be. Way worse than it should be. That means it could be more sustainable. Much more. Much more sustainable. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. Love to hear from you. And remember, we're live this next little bit. And so after that, we're going to have a recording in the next hour about, again, what I want to do is make a case for equities. I think I've made a strong case, but we'll see what your opinion is. I think it's a pretty strong case for why we need to quit trying to guess whether stocks are going to work or not. They always have. They always have. So back to this thought, if we have a slower pace, slower than ever, why do I feel like it can sustain? Again, we are nowhere near capacity in anything. We have not triggered inflation. And this, again, is one of the things that I think people miss. If you print money, does that mean we're going to have inflation? And if you just simply look at the old books and say, yes, if we have an abundance of cash sitting around, that can cause inflation. And it can. But what we miss is how quickly that circulates through the economy. And that's called velocity, if you want to use a big term. Velocity of money is the term used to define, or if you will, to explain how quickly money moves through the economy. And if it just sits in the banks, and that's exactly what happened, it sat. If it just sits there, then why would it cause inflation? And the answer is it doesn't. It does not, and it did not. Again, this is why when we use simple, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. That's not the case. It rarely is the case, frankly. Why is it rarely the case? Because human beings don't react exactly as we think they are going to. And that is the missing element. You just simply can't plug it in and expect people to do a certain thing. Well, if we do this, then human beings will do that. The same thing as you're going to hear all the noise about the tax reform, okay? And you just have to turn it off because it's all lies. It's all lies, both sides. It isn't going to be the panacea that we thought it would be. It's going to be fabulous, but it won't be perfect. We don't know what it'll be exactly. But the idea that it's only for the wealthy, or it's only going to hurt the blue states to pay high taxes, blah, 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 it's all wrong. It's going to cause massive budget deficits. Not true. Lowering taxes increases revenues, has every time. Every single time. Not just Reagan did it. Kennedy. And I don't believe they came from the same party either. Lowered tax rates to increase revenues. But we live in a nasty political world where everything all guns have to be ablazing to take out Trump. That's what has to happen. So there can't be any agreement on anything, and there won't. It's going to be nasty. But the fact of the matter is, with tax reduction, dynamic, if you will, dynamic rating of what those budget deficits would be, needs to be done, because if the economy improves, which it will, if we repatriate money back to the United States, which part of this bill is, that will be hugely positive to the economy. So as we go through this particular period of time, this is without any gains that we are seeing this slow recovery. It could easily pick up pace dramatically. Tax revenues would explode. The economy could clearly explode higher. And that would be a huge plus for the stock market. But what we miss is that whenever we do something, we think we pull this lever, this is going to be the exact thing that happens with tax revenue. It will not be. It's unknowable how excited, for example, will the economy get? How excited will business be to see taxes reduced? How much money will they invest? We don't know. It's dynamic. Changes. It can't just be put down. We have to look at this as a big picture item. It will be better. Absolutely, that's 100% true. We just don't know how much. Well, that's good enough. That should be good enough. Now, we will go through the game of pretending with dynamic predictions what the exact amount of budget deficits will be. But we really do not. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We have to take a quick break, and when we come back, hopefully we will hear from you. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number. If you have any comments and questions, et cetera, suggestions, anything, we'd love to hear from you. Over at PetsoFinancial.com. And that's PETSO, not the sauce, petsofinancial.com. Love to hear your comments, suggestions. We also have podcasts, articles, and calculators there to help you with your own financial planning. You know, it's amazing to me as we look at this and debate length of expansions and things like that, and whether it's this is, you know, about to be over and so on and so forth. Just amazing. We miss so much in that, and we have seen this as we talked about all the earnings that are coming through. So many amazing earnings, right? We just saw Apple this week. Unbelievable. And yet, it's just, and it's been one of those stocks that for years, we've talked about this, right? Because it's the biggest stock in the world. We should talk about it. But we've talked about it so many times in this whole debate of whether it's overpriced or we're about to, you know, nobody cares about the new iPhone. I mean, the noise around everything Apple does is deafening. And it's so deafening, and I think it's such a great lesson for us. It is deafening. Deafening to our ability to own one of the greatest corporations ever in the history of the world. I mean, really, how well they have done in the past 10 years is just, it's astounding. But every time they come out with a new iteration of the iPhone, what does everybody say? I'm not kidding. Oh, no, this isn't, there's not much change here. There's nothing here, Yep, it's just not like the original, which, you know, was ground-shaking. And people go buy it. And then they announce a new thing. We're going to do iPads. And then, no, they're just not replacing them the way they used to. And the babble goes on. Stock keeps rising. So people play this constant guess game of where the top is instead of owning a company. And when we just use Apple as an example, you can understand investing, I think, better. So they make gobs of money, this company. Let's call it Grape instead of Apple. Okay, why not? Let's call the company Grape. And so this company, Grape, makes a product that everybody loves. They love it. And they want to buy more products from this company. And so their cash flow goes up year after year. I mean year after year. Cash flow. And sometimes they've got a product that's a little better than others, but they keep announcing new products, and people love them even more. More people joining all the time. All the time. When you do that, and you have more people coming in, more cash flow, what do you care about a little movement in price? Tiny movement in stock price is what it is. It has no real bearing on the valuation of a real company that people would pay, I would suspect, well over $1 trillion. For the kind of cash flow, the kind of future this company has. You see, all of us Apple people are all caught up in their ecosphere. We pay a little bit of money every month just to store our pictures. Or maybe you like their music. And who knows what else coming. Maybe you use Apple Pay to pay for things. They're in everything, and the revenue is huge. Now, I'm not trying to sell you on Apple. Please don't misunderstand. That would be silly. I don't know if it belongs in your portfolio at all. It's just an example of all the jabber that goes on every day that is completely pointless, and which I think we're going to talk about a lot. I know we are. I recorded it in the next hour as I make the case for equities. But it's such a classic example. This week, not this week, yesterday, when earnings came out, even though the stock was up over 50% year to date, it still sent the stock higher to all-time highs. It was that good a report, that good. And what do people miss in that? Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know if the X is going to be that big a sell. It's way too expensive. on the 8 is probably just going to cannibalize the 8. Blah, blah, blah. Here's what it is. Company, the grape company, is making more money every quarter. Every quarter. The cash flow is increasing massively. And every quarter they pay a dividend to their shareholders. Every quarter they buy back more stock, shrinking the supply, making the shares that are currently available more valuable. That's what they do. That's what we miss when we sit around and guess about price, stock prices of great corporations. You know, I honestly believe that 90% of people should not own individual stocks because they don't know what they're looking at. And they typically will buy something like I had somebody the other day just call up, you know, I think I want to own some Starbucks. Why? I said, it's not like it's a new idea. How it fits a portfolio for a retiree, not quite sure. But it's all right. You own a couple shares. And I think that's one of those, if you will, passion things that are okay. But at the same time, understanding why you own a stock and what price you should pay for a stock is kind of important. Because you use their price or you like their coffee doesn't mean it's a reason to buy the stock. The same is true with Apple or any other consumer product company that you use. Liking their product is not a reason. But this is an example of how we have gotten so over the top and so out of touch with why we own companies. When it's a really simple story, companies doing better, generating more cash flow, higher earnings, paying higher dividends year after year is the reason that prices move. That's the reason why stocks go up. Not analysts and quarterly reports and this miss or that miss. Sure, the prices move temporarily. But as I think you're going to hear coming up in the next hour, focusing on the short term pretty much guarantees you're going to miss the long term big picture. And you don't want to miss that. You don't want to miss that. See, if we, with our own fixation on temporary price declines, periodic, temporary price declines has kept investors from so much. It's a weird fixation of some kind that we have on price. Even though prices are temporary, both good and bad, they're temporary. But imagine that. How crazy is that? Focusing on temporary price movement to stay out of the greatest investment. I'm going to make my case in the next hour, and I hope you have a great rest of the weekend. I know I will. And we'll talk to you live next week.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. I've been thinking about, I've been thinking a lot about the record highs. I mean, for a long time, of course. But in particular, I've been thinking about it for how, if you will, how disrespected this amazing bull market has been. How much crying of doom and gloom, if you will, inevitable doom and gloom, is right there. And it won't stop. It's like thousands and thousands of points, and we keep fixating on, you know, what's going to happen when the Fed goes away, or, you know, I wasn't really wrong. It was all a phony rise of some kind. It can't happen because of an oppressive Obama regime. And it was oppressive. It was horrifying to business. We've never seen anything like that in our lifetime for trying to, if you will, out-tax and out-regulate the rest of the world. We've never seen a more anti-business environment, and yet the market rose from the ashes of the Great Recession. Relentlessly through Europe, part one, two, three, and four, the QE and the tapering, if it goes away, and all of the constant chatter of how it was all going to end and end badly. And it didn't. And it doesn't. But the big takeaway is not this most recent, oh, the doom and gloomers are wrong. For me, it's like this culmination for me of 35 years in this industry and over 40 as an investor. And I mean day in and day out. I don't know what the future is, and there's lots of people smarter than me in the world. But there's a few observations I want to share with you today. And how psychologically I think we're just really messing this up. It's not that hard, but we make it really, really, really hard. So I want to break down, if you will, a case for equities. Why do we not see what is so obvious? Why can't we see the evidence in front of us? Why won't we change our mind? Why are we stuck? You see, equities have had the highest return. Equities, stocks, whatever you want to call them, and we're not here to use a big terminology. Stocks. Little pieces of paper that represent ownership of real businesses, the greatest corporations in the world, by the way. Some of which will soar, and soar even higher than anybody could ever imagine. Creating untold billions of wealth. Others will crash and burn. It's called creative destruction. It's a beautiful thing. The consumer, the little guy, in the very end, winds up the best of all because of creative destruction. But you're able to do this. It has the highest returns. The highest returns of any investment. Nothing is remotely close. You can't even put them on the same planet for returns. As far as cash or bonds or real estate, certainly not gold, which has gone nowhere for 200 years. Inflation adjusted, it's gone nowhere for 200 years. Nowhere. Cash has done far better. Some store of value, right? So as we talk about this and think about this, so we've got this investment over here in real businesses, right? A real deal business. It's not some weird thing. It's just, I can do this. What's weird about this is this. It has the highest returns. It's completely liquid, meaning you can buy and sell whenever you want. Any business day, anyway. You have no commitment to this company. You're not allowed to do anything. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's extremely low cost to buy and sell. You don't have to have a broker charging you 6% or whatever it is. You can do it for like $6.95 a trade. Amazing. You can get professional management for cheap. It's even available to really very low income people. $50 a month and you're in this game. Okay, so that is on, if you will, can you kind of get a picture on this side of the scale, right? You have the scales of justice, so to speak. We're weighing this out. Highest returns. It's liquid. You have no commitment. Low cost. And it's available to the very poorest of investors. And on the other side, you have to put up with temporary, periodic disruptions in price. That's all. See, you're weighing this out. You've got this mountain of stuff on one side, and you've got this temporary, periodic interruptions in price on the other. And what we do as human beings is we put a mountain of weight on that. Incredible, isn't it? You put a mountain of weight on something that's temporary and is certain to occur periodically, but it can't be gamed. As if that weighed a ton of gold compared to highest returns, liquid, no commitment, low cost, available to everybody. I don't want to get rich. I want to worry about this one temporary, certain to occur periodically, disruption in price. I don't want all that. And when we stop and we think about that, I find that astounding. Disturbing, actually. But it is truly astounding that we can put so much weight on something so temporary and so certain to occur that somehow we've kept collectively trillions of dollars away from creating untold wealth, individual freedom. Money's not just money. It's freedom. It's freedom to do things, not just fun things. It's freedom to create a business. It's freedom to create maybe a better lifestyle. Maybe it's a freedom to change the dynamic in your family with education of future generations. Maybe it's you want to change the future of your favorite charity. You want to change careers. You want to start a business. All of these things allow freedom. It's not just piling up money. That's why it's important to understand and try to get this right. What are we doing here? On the scale, we've got this mountain of stuff. And we got this molehill over here that somehow outweighs it. Psychologically, we're really messed up. We are so messed up. We can't wrap our minds around this, and we play some kind of weird guessing game. We try to turn this into, whoa, it's a casino game. No, it's not. These are real businesses. And no matter what you throw at business, high taxes, untold regulations, completely unfair because, hey, as soon as you create or you centralize any kind of government entity, we have that right here in Boise, right? You centralize, you have it in Idaho. Small states, imagine when we get to the federal level, how we dole out goodies to our pals, our lobbyist pals, that we decide who the winners are and the losers are, because we're smarter than everybody else. We're just trying to help the little people out there. All of that stuff combines to say, no, business finds a way. Business finds a way. Through great recessions, unreal regulation, unbelievable taxes, slow global growth, the stock market went up from the 6,000s to over 23,000 today. And guess what we had during that time? Temporary, periodic disruptions. Again, I'm going to lay out a case for equities. What's the matter with us? I mean, seriously, what in the world is the matter with our brains? This says this mountain of stuff over here is smaller than this molehill. We are really messed up. So I want to lay out a few things today. This is obviously a psychological game, don't you see? Right? I mean, we talk about this endlessly. Endlessly. Well, for over 30 years we have. How psychological this is. But it's not impossible to get your mind wrapped around this. What's impossible, it seems, is to turn down the noise. So in this segment, I want to lay out a couple of thoughts here generally what we're going to talk about the rest of the time, but also I want to specifically talk about what the media does to us, the negativity. It's really remarkable when you stop and think about all the parade of people. Oh, and you know that guy on TV that runs around with his hair on fire? He doesn't have much hair, but, you know, his head on fire. Bye, 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 sell, 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 blah, 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 blah. And he always seems to be right, because he always is, because one day he's bullish, the next day he's bearish, and one afternoon he's bearish, and then he's bullish. And we go, you remember yesterday when I was telling you the market would have a hard time today, and it goes down? It's like, see, I knew that. No, we don't know that. But we think with all that noise, there are some really, really, really smart people. And I'm going to circle back to that more later, because I think it's very, very important. But bad news sells. It does sell. It sells big time. People believe it. People believe it. We hear so much bad news every day. It's not just going to be a terrorist incident. It's not just going to be a busload of kids going off a cliff. It's not going to be every story, one after the other. The Trump administration is the greatest disaster in humankind. I think the polar bears are all going to die. I think that the market's going to crash. It's going to tank. It's actually soared. All of these things are just hyperventilating to try to get our eyeballs. It's just unbelievable that some people actually believe that recent economic news has been mostly good. Mostly good. It has been, but the media doesn't report it that way. It doesn't report it that way at all. And we can't look away. You see, when there's high volatility in the market, by the way, volatility is code word for market's going down. When the market is going down, viewership goes up. We can't blame them. You can only blame you, because you turn it on only when you are trying to get some information, some data to figure out what you should do, because you have a temporary, periodic price decline. That's the price you pay. So let me see if I can focus on this periodic decline, okay, and really get fussed up about it. You know, I mean, I want to see if I can develop an ulcer. I want to really wonder if my whole retirement plan, my plan for educating my kids and my grandkids, the legacy I'm going to leave for the charity, all my plans, I want to see if I can really get fussed up about that. Because, you know, if I could lose some sleep and stuff, and I could really focus, I could somehow figure out the future if I could just watch people dance around on TV and talk, scratching their eyeballs out about how bad it is that the Dow went down 300 points. That's smart. And don't you think that's smart? I think that's just genius. How is that going to help us stay in the game? But you see, viewership skyrockets when markets go down. And when markets are going up, nobody's watching. It's boring. Super boring. And as we go through, it helps feed this urge to panic. Like, I have this decline. Again, it's temporary, and it happens periodically, but if I can focus on it enough, I think I can get myself to panic. It doesn't really sound very smart. We do this. We do this a lot. And we hide behind me. During the great, collapse, if you will, the financial crisis, we saw people that moved out literally at the bottom. Or maybe just before the bottom, feeling smart for a week or two or a month. Did they get in? Are they still out? That's okay. You know, I paid off my house with my 401k. You lost half your 401k to taxes, to pay off your bills, because you panicked. All that money's gone. It's gone. It's gone. Look, this isn't meant to beat you up. It's to help you understand as we go forward, because guess what? We'll have more temporary, periodic corrections. And we have to learn from our mistakes. We have to rethink this. What we think is financial education, oftentimes, is nothing more than noise, economic jabber. It has nothing to do with correctly managing your money. Absolutely nothing. Nothing. We got to get a handle on ourselves. I got to get a break out of the way here, and we'll be right back after this. Hello, and welcome to this special edition of Money Matters. Of course, I'm Dave Pezzo, and this is a recording. I wanted to come in and record this because it's just been where I just don't have any other disruptions. This has been, if you will, I've been thinking about this, dwelling on it for quite some time. And it just wants to come out, so I hope this is helpful. But we've been talking about, as the markets hit record highs, how many trillions are out of the market? And again, I've been doing this for a long, long, long time. I, like everybody else, don't know what the future is going to be. So I can only share what the past has been and what we want to be investing and how we invest. And try to give you, and if you will, a case for equities, a case for stocks. Because we talk about asset allocation. Should I be in bonds? Should I be in stocks? Should I be in real estate? Should I be in this? Should I be in that? Are interest rates going up? Are they going down? What if we have this Fed governor or that one? Oh my, the market hit all-time highs. Oh, the market went down. We fuss over everything. And through all of that, the market does very well. It really well. And so, again, I want to hit on this because I'm going to keep hitting on it. So we have this investment, right? This investment, again, the scales of justice. It has the highest returns, so much higher than anything else. Nothing is remotely close. Nothing is close. For your lifetime, your grandparents' lifetime, your great-grandparents' lifetimes, this has been true. The highest returns, fully liquid. Super low cost to buy and sell. $6, you buy a piece of a business. Are you kidding me? Who gets to do that? You have no commitment to it. You're not even allowed to show up and shovel the sidewalk in a snowstorm for these great businesses that you're allowed to buy. And you can do that with almost no money. $50 a month and you're in. You're into something that creates enormous wealth and has throughout history. $50. And on the other side of the scale, we have temporary, periodic disruptions in price. That's it. And so the point being, the temporary disruptions, this molehill of what we do, outweighs this mountain of returns, liquidity, everything you would want in an investment. Why? What's the matter with us? Right? So that's a great question. What in the world is the matter with me?
Because I'm nervous. I'm scared. This is the top. Blah, blah.
It's not the end. It's temporary. If you have bad luck and you get in and then boom, you get hit by a correction, buy more. Or you can be like, unfortunately, most investors behave badly. And say things like, it's a rigged game. I knew I shouldn't have done it. I knew the market was topping. I had that, feeling. Blah, blah, blah. And then you can dive out. Wait for something to look really good again. Dive in when prices are really high. Smart behavior. And it destroys massive amounts of capital. And in the end, people give up. Great. How about we change that? So let's talk about chasing returns and what people often do with chasing returns. So for the past, if you will, 5 of the last 6 years, because the last 12 months have been rock star good, emerging markets have stunk compared to, well, just about anything else. But compared to a particularly this narrow group of stocks, called the S&P 500. Well, the S&P 500 is really about the 70 greatest corporations, America only, not in the world, Greatest by market capitalization, meaning the biggest. So if the big boys are running, the S&P is running. That's it. If it's not, you may be making a lot of money on your non-S&P stocks and wonder why the market doesn't reflect that. That's, of course, the problem with pure index trading. Now, there's many problems. We're not getting into that today. But what we're talking about here is chasing it. So I'm investing in the sector here. And so what we hear now today is you just got to buy. You have to be a passive investor. It's low cost. And we have put this halo around it. Like, it's so great because it outperforms everything else. Warren Buffett says this is what you should do, and so on and so forth. And all the academics who, of course, have never created anything in their life, and they sit around in their professor roles doing what business? Anyway, my point is they have all decided that it's all about cost, not about being an active or passive investor. It's just about that cost thing. And again, I'm not knocking all passive investing at all. But the idea that it has lower risk and all is crazy. It doesn't. It has higher risk because you're all in to that simple market movement. And when we look at that and we think about all of this chasing of returns, people then turn around and they say, I can't believe I'm in emerging markets. You're a fool, you financial advisor guy, talking to me about how prices are low or they're bargains or they have the largest population in the world moving to the middle class, blah, blah, blah. We all know the case. But because we are so short-sighted, we chase returns. How come I'm not rich yesterday? Look, everybody knew that the S&P 500 was a place to be. Except for you. Why am I in emerging markets? Why would I ever be there? Because we glom on to all of these data points out there. And we chase. We chase hot sectors. How come I don't own Google, Amazon, Priceline, and Netflix? Huh? How come? Well, you have an income portfolio. You're trying to live off your portfolio. I think those stocks don't, none of them pay a dividend. And, it may not. Yeah, but they just go up and then we could sell some. You mean they did go up and you weren't there because it wasn't fitting your portfolio? Yeah, but because they're going up, they're going to keep going up. And that's the way our brain works. And don't get me wrong. My biggest holdings are Google, Apple, Amazon, and Micron because of Micron's big run. But you see, I'm not needing income right now. So as we look at a portfolio, we have to also decide what it is we're trying to do. And by the way, I also have emerging markets and all these other things that didn't work as well as a portfolio should. It's a natural, but it leads us to gravitate towards chasing returns. Don't do that. Think about it this way. If you want to win a hockey game, you don't chase the puck around the ice. As Gretzky said, when he was asked, how did you score so many goals? He said, I skated to where the puck was going. Brilliant. Brilliant for everything. That's why politicians don't lead. They follow whatever the polls say. They just put their finger in the air. They wet it and put it in the air. Why don't they put it up your nose? Right? They're not leading. Few have. They're the greats, right? But it's true of all of us. We have to pull away, think differently. But don't chase returns. Bad idea. We'll be back with more. Hello and welcome to the special edition of Money Matters. I really have been thinking a lot about this, about why it is we can't invest correctly, why we can't stay in the game. I know it's a psychological game, and this happens, that happens. We all have lots of excuses, but here's the bottom line. Logic, think. If I behave correctly, behaving correctly is everything, everything. Probably in life. But anyway, that's another sermon, if you will. Now, if we come and look at this as a weight of evidence, okay, I know you heard me say this last time, but again, think about this. Highest returns, nothing else is close. It's liquid. You have no commitment to management or anything else. It's super low cost to buy and sell. and it's available to the poorest people. $50 a month to get rich. And we put on the other side of the scale that temporary, periodic disruptions is going to somehow outweigh all of that. Are you kidding me? What is the matter with us? All right. That's maybe overstating it. I actually think it's understating it. This is so absurd in my mind. And the idea that we're going to get more information from the boneheads on TV and on the internet about how the coming catastrophe, because I've been looking at some squiggly charts about student loans or what the Fed's doing or how we're going to unwind the balance sheet, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to focus on temporary, periodic disruptions to all of that story. Stunning. In its stupidity, to waste time listening to these people that have sold, if you will, snake oil way, way in the past. It's always bad news. When I started in this industry, there was a guy named Howard Ruff House. If you followed his advice throughout the 80s and 90s, you would have lost 93% of your money during the greatest bull market in history. I am not joking. But don't worry, he was rich. He sold more than a dozen books, did seminars, had newsletters. He was the doom and gloom king. Now we just got dozens of them that have more ways to slice and dice and come to you for almost no cost via the internet. Welcome to my home, financial pornography. Please come on in. And we sit around, we look at it. But here's part of the problem too. It's not just bad news sells. That's your fault, by the way, pal, not the purveyors of the doom and gloom. That's your fault because you let them in. You sit and look at it and you say, you know what? The molehill is bigger than the mountain. You're right. You're so right. We're going to be the first people ever to have guessed the great crash. The greatest ever, the one that never comes back. Bears seem smart. They do. See, I would sound a whole lot smarter, really, if I told you with all the big words I can come up with, to show you some charts, really dig up some economic evidence of how we are about to crash. How the reason why we didn't crash last year, the year before that, or when the Shemitahs and Blood Moons came and all that stuff, man, whoo! Or when the Fed was tapering or they were tapering back and then they're raising interest rates. All those things I told you would cause a crash? No. They didn't happen? Really? But now they will. And we lean into the camera a little bit, and we kind of scratch a beard because it's a lot better. You know, you have to look a little older, get some gray on the chin, and then talk about how really concerned you are. And hopefully you don't just deepen your voice to sound very concerned. That's slow it down a little bit. You got to kind of have a condescending, like, well... Although we're nearing all-time highs, we're seeing that people are just far too optimistic about the market. Think of all the beginners, the people just starting in, you know, that are just like shoeshine boys, for example, you know, buying stocks. I was in a cab the other day, you know, the cabbie, the Uber guy, he had a stock tip for me. Oh, my, really? I mean, you hear this all the time. They sound so smart, condescending, and they are. It's absurd that we actually don't stop and look at what the record is or the fact that they dance back and forth. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that guy, Art Cashin, I think his name is, you know, on CNBC. I see him once in a while. I don't think he's ever been right or wrong because he just like, well, you know, right now we're dealing with the 850 level. We're dealing with the 750 level. We're dealing with whatever, blah, 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 blah. You know, some kind of floor trader guy, whatever. And he never says anything. Well, I don't think the market's going to go down. He's just a doom and gloom guy, and he is. But now, then all of a sudden the next day when the market keeps going higher, I say, well, there's really no reason to take the market down here. In other words, thank you for giving me a yesterday's weather report. Yesterday was sunny. That's not very helpful. But we got to fill hours and hours of time when all it boils down to is putting your money into the highest returns, most liquid, no commitment, low cost, available to everybody, and put up with temporary, periodic price disruptions. What could be more boring? But that doesn't sell eyeball views, does it? We got to take our final break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some history, recent history. Don't worry, not too long back. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. This is our final segment. Something that has just been on my mind, in my heart almost, really. It's just something that I've been thinking a lot about. And I've traveled a good bit lately and picked up some more, you know, gone to some different, talked to money managers, things like that. That probably, you know how you're like sitting in the airport going, killing time, but you're thinking about it because you just came out of meeting after meeting after meeting, that type of stuff. This just kind of resonated with me that I wanted to talk about, and just simply a simple thought, make the case for equities. Why don't we just talk about this? Okay, we talk about it piece by piece, week by week, for years, I know. But to tie it together and really think about our behavior and how silly this is, how we behave in investing. And once again, you're taking this scale of justice, right? We're weighing out the options. You have on one side of the scale the highest returns. Nothing is close to what stocks, equities. And I don't want to just call them these things because they're not things. These represent a piece of the greatest corporations in the world. That's what they are. And you don't know what, maybe which ones to buy, so you buy ETFs or mutual funds and you have them professionally managed, which is what most people should do. I mean almost all, okay? And we'll talk about that in a moment. And you can do this even if you don't have much money. And somehow the molehill of temporary periodic disruptions decides that it outweighs this mountain. That's your problem. It's not the market's problem. It's your problem. You're putting weight, you're putting it on the wrong thing. Well, it's risky. Why is it risky? How do we define risk? So let's start with risk. How do you define it? Do you define risk as, let's say you're a retiree? I have risk. The risk I have is that I will run out of purchasing power. I will run out of money before I'm dead. Okay? That's fair. What does a periodic decline have to do with that? Gosh, I don't know, but it does, because it makes me nervous because I'll run out if the bucket gets too low. Okay, let me give you an example. Is Procter & Gamble, it's really tough. They've got high technology. We don't know when they could possibly go out of business because they make soap, okay? They make soap and diapers. Perfect balance sheet. For 70 years, they've raised their income. Now, stop and think about that. What happened in 2008 as the market's going down? I don't know. Well, I'll tell you. They raised their dividend. Well, but their stock price went down. Right. A temporary, periodic decline in price. Not value. What about 2009? Yep. Raised it again, even though the stock had gone down another 20%. No, that sounds ridiculous. You mean my income went up? Uh-huh. Your income went up. How do you define risk? Well, I want to educate my kids. Right. So how would you define risk in that? Well, that I can't educate my kids. Duh. Okay. So should we put the money in? They're going to be, you want to get started, and they're like 5 and 3 years old, whatever. Yeah. So should we put in something that earns zero? or actually loses a little to inflation every year for like the next 15 years when they go to school? That doesn't sound very smart. Well, we could put in this really risky thing called equities that has a history of outperforming everything else over the long term. But you have to put up with periodic temporary price declines. So as we get closer, what we would do is dial back that a little bit, right? We'd start, because you need to have the money, like, so when they get to be mid-teens, we want to dial that back a little bit. Well, but when they're 6 years old, what if it declines? Well, I would think we're going to probably be adding to it, so that would be a good thing. Oh, yeah. Well, I got a 401k. I want to get enough money for retirement. Good. Then price declines are good for you. Well, how's that? Because you're buying more as you accumulate. How we define risk is really important. Is it? The risk is only, we only define it as temporary periodic declines, or would it actually be a big picture type of thing? That your risk is your risk. If you're heading towards retirement, are you going to have enough? If you're in retirement, do you have something that's going to grow and provide an increasing income stream that you can't outlive? Or would you rather define it by something that doesn't matter to you? Because it's your choice. You can put all of the weight on the scale with the molehill. Or you can actually reconfigure mentally, what does risk mean to you? Isn't it you? Are you going to let the hair on fire people or the really smart sounding bears lean into the TV and tell you how bad it is? And if you just buy their newsletter, you can navigate the coming disaster of the world? No, you can't. You're smarter than that. But we got to get a handle on this. We've got to get a handle on it. You've got to be patient. What's the matter with us? How come I'm not rich this week? I just bought Micron last week and it's not up. What's going on here? Do you think we should change? Do you think we need to go get something else? Wow. I mean, seriously, we do that. We do that. We buy great corporations and we toss them aside. Insane. We've been taught by all of the greats. John Templeton, Peter Lynch, Michael Price, Warren Buffett, that you can't time the market. And that idiot trying to sell a newsletter or eyeball views on a website of doom and gloom. Really? I think Warren Buffett doesn't know what he's talking about, but this guy does? Stop it. Stop it. We need to be patient. Give it time. And for those young people out there, goodness gracious, why aren't you investing yesterday? The greatest compounding effect of your money is time. Not how much you put in. That's all free. You don't have to put any in. It just compounds and grows over time. Little bits. Get in. Get in. You have to start. And you can, as I pointed out in our scale, goodness gracious, you start for nothing. $50 a month. $50 a month.
Well, I don't know.
Fine. You're a derelict. Go. Get back to the bar with your buddies and pals. Look, I like to have a good time, too. I have a great time. But there are certain things that you have to be reasonably serious about. Like actually saving a tiny fraction of your income? So you have freedom? In your life? Oh, man, what a give up. I mean, I just went through just a quick story. You know, I just went through this horrible thing. It's called the lawsuit, right? It's okay. We did good. But in the end, but this goes on for 2 years. It's a grind. It's terrible. And the legal bills were nearly $200,000. If I didn't have the resources, I couldn't have fought, because you're fighting a big company. Almost always you are, or government or something. I hear story after story like that. Not just me. Other business people, if they don't have it, they can't. They just cave. They just cave because they don't have the resources. See, I wasn't the only one in this particular deal. There were 150 people. Only three of us didn't cave. Three. Three. Because they're scared, didn't have the resources. It's pervasive. It's way bigger than you think. We have to have assets backing us to have real freedom. Sometimes it's freedom to fight. This isn't gambling. This is reconfiguring our minds. Think. Think. From a deeper level than, I wonder if the market's too high. What are P/E ratios? Blah, blah, blah. Think. Be patient. And here's the other driver, okay, for you younger people out there. You start. You have to start now. I don't care how much you have. Start. $50. Then you can go to 60. Then you go to 100 and so on. Don't wait. Start. And for the rest of us, here's the other side of that. Finish. Finish. If it requires you turn off the TV, if it requires you unplug the internet, you get rid of that website. Finish. Finish. You don't win if you don't finish. You can't win if you're not in the game. Remember the scales. Highest returns. Liquid. No commitment. Low cost. Available to everybody, even poor people. All of that is a mountain against this molehill that is a temporary periodic decline. Equities have returned more than anything else by so far. It's not even close. Let's rethink it. I'll be back live next week.